You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Hey everyone, in keeping with the theme that 2022 is certainly feeling a lot like 2020, we're releasing another favorite episode with Mike Feist. We originally released this on December 8th, 2020. Mike was supposed to be prepping for the release of West Side Story at that time, and in this interview, he discusses his experience with the film's legendary director Steven Spielberg, incredible choreographer Justin Peck, and his incomparable co-stars and Jets family. Now, the movie's out in theaters a year later than expected and wowing audiences and critics alike, as well as having a hefty start to the award season. Feist plays Riff, and boy, is he sensational. Please enjoy our conversation. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of My First Show. Oh, my guest, where do I start? A heartthrob, an incredibly talented individual, one of the purest and biggest hearts on Broadway and in Hollywood, a dear, dear pal, and someone I am so excited to be talking to for the next hour, Mike Feist. Welcome, Mike.
Hi, Eva. How's it going? Thank you for having me. How cool is this? Congratulations.
Well, it turns out that when you're a Broadway producer and Broadway closes, you have some time on your hands.
Sure. Yeah, we all have to kind of try and wear new hats at the moment, don't we? Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, I love a good bowler hat. So the one I chose was the Fosse-inspired podcast.
Very good. Well, I've listened to a couple of your episodes, and I just think it's wonderful what you're doing. And I don't know, super fun. And I mean, you know, I'm such a huge fan of yours. And, you know, I just think you're wonderful. And so when you asked me to be on the show, it was just, oh, yeah, of course. No problem. Of course.
Oh, I appreciate that. You know, it's really just a moment to look back and think about, especially when the world's so dark right now, to think about yesterday and how beautiful it was to be who we were as kids and in our formative years and draw that line. So, you know, it's line drawing time, and I'm thrilled to draw yours. You know, you came into my mind most. You come into my mind a lot, I will say, especially when I'm listening to the Dear Evan Hansen soundtrack. Sure. But you came into it most recently because I had a meal with both my mom and your godmother a few weeks ago. And, you know, she let me know how you're doing. And as I start every episode and every conversation these days, how are you doing?
That's an interesting question, isn't it?
It sure is.
Well, I mean, it's so crazy, you know, how the two of us are connected, because we were connected, of course, on in our industry and through Dear Evan Hansen, and that's really how we met. And then we kind of found out through that oh, we had this other connection randomly through our families, you know, and our people who, you know, matter a lot to us in our lives. You know, and so it's kind of like this really cool thing. How am I doing?
Safe space.
Yeah. No, I'm, you know, I'm very fortunate. Everyone's been having a crazy time and trying to wrap their mind around what any of this is or what we're supposed to do about it. And it's kind of this strange in-between place of waiting sometime. Yeah. You know, it kind of feels like we're just kind of on pause and sitting and waiting. And then at the same time, we're trying to take advantage of the moment a little bit and maybe try new hats on or, you know, do things that never really occurred to us before. For me personally, it's the pause has been nice to kind of step away from our industry in a little bit and just kind of be a person.
Which we forget about.
Totally, you know. So I've taken advantage of it as much as I could. I've done a bunch of driving around the country, actually, and just I've been camping and just seeing different parts of this country, and sitting down and just seeing the different areas and different people and how people are reacting right now because of all of this. And it's fascinating. I mean, it's super fascinating. I have, it's kind of like I'm doing my own little, John Steinbeck Travels with Charlie a little bit. I like just packed the car and I have my dog and we're just like going around and seeing this country in this lens right now.
And what has been the most surprising thing that you've witnessed?
I think I didn't really fully realize just how vast and broad this country really is. I mean, if you really think about it, it's kind of a miracle that this is a single country.
I know. That's so true.
It's so crazy because, you know, like I stopped in this, there's a place in New Mexico called Pie Town, New Mexico. And literally Pie Town, New Mexico only consists of like two general stores that sit right next to each other that sell pies. And like, that's it, you know? And it's a really, really, really small town. And I think it's just off like old Route 66. So it used to be, I think, a much more popular kind of quick place to stop for drivers that needed a restroom break and wanted a cup of coffee and a slice of pie. And, I was talking to one of the shop owners and seeing how they were doing. And they're like, it's not great. it's not great, you know, but, you know, they're doing their best. And I think overall, everyone's kind of just being positive and just making do and I don't know, just doing what they can to keep on keeping on, you know. But I mean, the people, I never really fully understood, I guess, just the vastness of everything and how different every little section of this country is, you know. And the people in Pie Town, New Mexico need different things than, you know, the Hasidim in Williamsburg. And like, you know, we just don't realize that. I don't know. It's just been interesting.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that I think this pandemic has taught us is that we are more connected than we ever knew and ever faced. And frankly, more similar than we ever knew and ever faced.
Yeah.
And that adventure that you've been going on is kind of the perfect microcosm for what the world is going through. I had no idea about this, so it's fascinating to hear, but it's making me think that you are going through different cities and different states and you're realizing that there are so many differences, yet so much connecting us all because we are still one America. We're one Earth.
Absolutely. Yeah.
we're one civilization. And
absolutely.
So much divides us, but we're actually all more alike than than we realize. I think the Borat movie sort of tells you that story. I don't know if you've seen the new Borat movie.
I have not yet. But it is, and it's really like, it's truly a miracle. It's a miracle that this is a United States of America. It's really like, it's kind of unfathomable that like it operates at all.
Well, as we talk about this one America, let's turn back to little Mike Feist, who grew up in Ohio, if we want to talk about like the state that sort of is a referendum on the country and all it can be. Tell us about your upbringing and tell us about the first show you ever saw.
I had a great upbringing. I was adopted from birth to my mother and my father, who raised me, and my older sister, who is about eight to nine years, depending on where we are in the year, older than me. And then there was my godmother and her children that I also grew up with as well. And that was kind of like, that was our tribe. Those were the people that, we grew up with. And, you know, they always, I don't know, we all really loved each other a lot and we supported each other, a lot. And of course, like family dynamics are weird and, you know, everyone's like, you know, nothing's perfect and what have you. But I grew up watching old MGM films and, you know, I kind of fell in love with Gene Kelly, and I just remember pestering my mom to get me into dance classes, at like a young age. And I feel like I can't really remember exactly maybe what the first live show I ever saw was. But I do think that my first Broadway show in New York was, I think, maybe Fosse. Interesting, right? And I think like I remember going back home one time and looking through old playbills, and I saw Chris Catelli's photo in that. And later on, like, realized, well, and for people that don't know who Chris Catelli is, Chris is an amazing choreographer director in the Broadway community, and he choreographed Newsies, which was my first Broadway show. That was really cool to, I don't know, see that interconnected tissue kind of. I think Fosse was maybe my first Broadway show. Man, it was a blast too.
It's a good first.
Well, you know, it's super fun, and you know, it's just, you know, these awesome numbers and celebrating this artist's life and whatnot. So the first one I can remember.
I have a couple questions about that. So first off, you are not the first guest of my first show to pull out a Broadway playbill years later of their first show they ever saw and realize they have worked with someone in it.
How do you think that makes the person that was in the playbill feel?
Well, Barrett Wilbert Weed had that same experience with Carrie Butler when she realized on our show that her first show was Beauty and the Beast, which Barrett then starred with Carrie Butler in Mean Girls with. So how that crazy. Was hilarious. Crazy. And I love this idea about you and Gatelli having that connection. We are big Gatelli fans around here.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he's wonderful, truly.
He's the best. Yeah. But I'm so fascinated that your first Broadway show was a dance-based show, because we know you best, I should say, as brooding.
That's what I was about to say. That's literally what I was about to say. Brooding actor.
Brooding, beautiful, soulful actor, because you do it so well. And I think everyone who either knows you personally or is guessing about you from hearing you right now is like, he's a very joyful dude. So like, talk to me about your love of dance and classic musical theater and that world of MGM, and how the roles you play are actually often the opposite of that.
I know. It's really interesting. I don't know what that's about. it really is interesting. I think, like, there's just as a kid, there was just like such an amazing escapism with, yeah. especially within those older MGM films, you know, they're so, I don't know, they're magical and they're, you know, I think those films, they were live, they were doing it, you know, it's yeah. not like how movies are made today. And even in later, you know, maybe not even going that far back, but then looking at movies like Indiana Jones or something like that, there's just like this, I don't know, playfulness and hyper reality where you're allowed to like escape and I don't know, kind of like be a part of it in a weird way. I don't know why. I don't know. That's the power of just like art and I think movies and and writing and television shows and theater too. But yeah, I loved the idea of like dancing and I loved to dance and I loved songs and I loved musical theater and I loved to like dance around the house and like sing songs. And I loved that. And I loved like playing pretend. I loved doing that. So I always kind of knew like, oh, I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to pursue this thing. And it at first really was this, it was just like, oh yeah, musical theater. It was really all I knew because it was what I did growing up, like in children's theater and things. I think that's the most popular kind of maybe availability for younger people and the most like interesting, I think, for younger people too, musical theater, because there is all of those elements of, you know, song, dance and acting as well. Mm-hmm. And then I think, I don't know. I think it was really when I moved to New York and I started studying at the conservatory program and meeting my teachers and my peers. And I started to really become interested in humans and like, especially humans that are deeply, deeply, deeply flawed. And what makes them human, kind of like why they are the way that they are. And I don't know, there's something that draws me to that. Yeah, and that was the thing that really attracted me most to Dear Evan Hansen too, is because, you know, I think it was very easy for people to just say, oh, so Connor is a bully, because, you know, we all fall in love with Evan Hansen and Ben's character so easily. And that's in part because of Ben and his performance. And that's in part because of Steven and his writing, and obviously Benj and Justin and their music and just everything about that character. And it's very easy as an audience member to just say, oh, that kid's the bully and that kid's getting picked on, you know? Right. And then you kind of, but what I loved about Dear Evan Hansen is that, we show that like that's not the whole story. You know, and not everybody gets that, but maybe they feel that on like a subconscious level, or they're able to, I don't know, feel something. But I think for me what's so interesting is to just pose a question to an audience.
Right.
And also not shove any sort of message down their throat, but simply just like ask a question. You know, it's important to me. Yeah.
That's what good storytelling is.
Yeah, I think so.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor,
Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
What was the first show you were in?
I think the first show I was in was Wizard of Oz. And I played one of the Munchkin Guild guys, the Lollipop Guild. That's what it is. I wore like goatee and a mustache at like 8 years old and had crazy bushy eyebrows and rosy cheeks. And was like, you know, this crazy, I don't know, Benjamin Button, tiny man, you know. It was like, you know, and yeah, that was one of my, I think that was my first show, was being a Munchkin in the Lollipop Guild.
Do you remember which solo line you had?
No, couldn't tell you. Okay. Do they have solo lines? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they would step forward and they would sing, not all of them, all the Lollipop Guild, but some of the Lollipop Guild would step forward. And if I'm remembering correctly, it's been a while.
If that's the case, then I probably didn't have one. it's okay.
You did okay.
I did all right. I blended in really well. I think that was probably my first show. It was maybe like eight, nine, or 10 years old doing Wizard of Oz.
And where was that, a community theater or school?
Yeah, it was children's theater, community children's theater in Ohio, in Columbus. Yeah.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
And so what was your first professional show then?
So I moved to New York at 17 and I was going to a conservatory program. And then I dropped out of that conservatory program and was just doing odd jobs, and I wasn't really auditioning. I was kind of too terrified to audition and put myself out there. And it was a friend of mine that kind of dragged me kicking and screaming to an audition. And it was, funny enough, White Christmas, at a dinner theater in, Ohio, back in Ohio.
Oh my God. You come to New York to go back to Ohio.
Yeah. So I did that holiday season. I did, White Christmas as an ensemble member, at a dinner theater in Ohio. And I lived in the back of a McDonald's parking lot, and I got paid like $200 a week. And then I was collecting like food stamps at the same time. And
Wow. That's
what I did. That was my first gig.
Wow. Non-equity, I'm imagining.
No. No way.
And that was the start of kind of your Gene Kelly MGM fascination,
especially? I like stepped away from dancing for such a long time, and then there was these little things that were making me dance again. And then after that, I did a series of three different shows in New Hampshire at a small theater there.
Which theater?
It was the Palace Theater in New Hampshire.
In Concord, New Hampshire?
Manchester,
New Hampshire. I am from near there, so I went to a lot of those theaters. Yes.
Okay. So this was in Manchester, and it was, it was a series of three different shows. Mm-hmm. Two were 42nd Street and Hairspray. Mm-hmm. And then the third one was this show called The Four Piano Men, which was like this dance song medley. Mm. Of who was it? Stevie Wonder, Queen, Billy Joel, and Elton John, of just like all their hits. And so like it was 2 hours of just straight dance your face off to awesome rock music. And that's kind of, I was like dancing for a while, and I was just in the ensemble, and for a while I was just thinking, well, this is my way in, you know. I'm a okay enough dancer where they're getting me into, you know, I'm getting ensemble jobs. And then after New Hampshire, I booked Newsies, where I, that's what I was doing. I was in the ensemble of that. But yeah. And so that was kind of like my way in, was through dance.
Yeah. Which is kind of exciting and I guess predestined that your major movie Arrival is going to be in the film of West Side Story, which is the dance musical of our generation, of all generations, frankly, of American musical theater's generation. Like booking that, did that just blow your mind? And
just- yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know, it was kind of crazy because I was doing a play. So I was done with Dear Evan Hansen, and now I was doing another Stephen Levinson play, actually, off Broadway at Second Stage, called Days of Rage. Mm-hmm. And that was a play about basically the Weather Underground, the Weathermen Underground, during the 1960s. And the, you know,
more brooding.
Yes, more brooding. This is more satirical, which I appreciate. But, yeah, I remember we were in production for that, and I just remember my agent calling me and being like, hey, so they want you to come in and they want you to dance with all the guys. And I had like submitted a tape prior, I don't know, 4 months before that or something like that. And I just remember being like, oh, crap. Because I hadn't danced at that point now in like eight years. And I was like, oh my God, you know, it's going to be all these amazing dancers and then me. And I'm just going to make a fool out of myself. This is going to not end well. And so I remember even asking, like, is there a way we can like not have to dance? They're like, no, you gotta dance, man. This West Side. And so
I'm an actor who moves.
Yeah, that's really how I felt. But I remember it was I went in to the audition, and the choreographer for West Side is Justin Peck, who's
no big deal.
Oh my gosh, he's wonderful. I mean, I didn't know who he was, you know. I thought, you know, the choreographer, he's close to my age, and we kind of have very similar body types. We're both tall and kind of all arms and legs, you know. And so I started like seeing him move and seeing what the movement was. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, I think I lucked out because Justin and I are similar body types, the way he choreographs and what his movement is. Mm-hmm. I felt like, oh, I can do this. I can, not only I can do this, but I can do it, I think, well.
Yeah. You can embody the movement in the way
I think
it's
so.
Meant to be.
I benefited by having Justin as the choreographer. Not only is he brilliant as that, and he was also extremely willing to listen to me and hear pushback from me in moments and pose a lot of questions and do what I felt like I needed to do. But he was also, him and his partner, Patricia, are just the two of the kindest people ever. And they were extremely patient with me, not only as from a creative point of view, but from, teaching me the movements and getting me comfortable with it. Yeah, I totally lucked out with that. And you know, I would never ever say I'm an amazing dancer. I don't think that at all. I really don't. And I don't think that that's the case in this either, but I know that those boys, man, they're just incredible. And not only are they incredible dancers, but they're amazing storytellers and just amazing artists. Yeah.
And I imagine, like everyone listening to this podcast, you grew up and loved the original West Side Story film.
Yes.
So how much pressure and struggle did you have recreating that film every day in throughout that process, knowing that you were going to be the next 100 years version of Riff, the way I'm blanking on that actor's name, but I can see his face perfectly.
Russ Tamblyn
yeah. created yeah. that for all the generations before us.
Yeah. You know, I couldn't think about that. I remember this was, our first day of rehearsal, I remember I grabbed all of the Jets and I took them out and we went to grab a beer and, you know, we got, I don't know, tacos and just a bunch of food and we just sat down and I remember kind of like, really, we're all just messing around and hanging out. And then I just remember like stopping and I told everyone and I said to them, hey, you know, listen, this is our version. Like, this is our chance to, we have to take ownership of this. Yeah. And because it's us at the end of the day, now it's us. So it's our version and it's your version and what you want to do. And kind of from that day, those boys immediately followed me. Mm-hmm. And there was this, I don't know, it was a really amazing process. And the work that we did as Jets was everything. It was exactly, it was everything I've always wanted in terms of how I wanted to work. You know, and Steven really allowed me the liberty to run as wild as I possibly wanted to. And everybody just hopped on board with me. And I'm so grateful because they lifted me up and they propelled me forward. And then we propelled each other forward. And that whole experience was, here is this community and here is this family of guys who really are dependent on one another. And they're codependent and they're, you know, it's unhealthy and it's everything that they know and it's all filled with love and fear. And that's where we lived. We lived that for that year, for the entirety of that year. That's where we lived. And, I don't know that it was immerse.
Yeah.
It was everything I kind of hoped to do as an actor.
Yeah. I mean, not to be too poetic, but you danced on a razor's edge, it sounds like, doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
You learned you know, in the future life, you could be a gang leader.
Okay. Yeah. Who knows?
It's just skills.
But yeah, I don't know. I guess to really answer that question, I let go of any pressure to have to be any sort of way. And I just remember being, this is who I think this person is. This is what I think he's thinking. And this is it, you know, and this is everything that I want to do. And, you know, I'm just going to run with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, trust that the powers that be are going to point me in the right direction too. And they did, you know, they just let me run wild.
I'm not going to ask you what it's like to work with Steven Spielberg, the legend, because everyone else I'm sure has asked you that question.
Yeah.
But,
but how is it?
Give me something, just something surprising or some is there a story from set? I mean, come on, it's Steven. And I told you, we can swear here. It's Steven Spielberg.
I know. It really is. It really is. I mean, here's the thing about Steven. Steven is, I said this when we were doing towards the tail end of our shooting, we were doing these little EPK interview things. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's a guy who is Steven Spielberg, and he is kind of like King Midas. Anything he touches turns to gold, and he has everything. He has everything, and none of that matters. He is like this person who is filled with joy and love, and he just loves what he does, and he loves what he's working on, and he treats it with the utmost care and love and respect. And there's no agenda. There's nothing. It's just the pureness of doing the thing. And that was it. And that was contagious and infectious. And I mean, truly, like West Side, we were in a cult. we all drank the juice and we got converted and we had a crazy experience. Yeah. And then we had to like leave that world, and here we are in a pandemic, you know.
and wait an extra freaking year to have it come out and live it. I know.
Yeah. I mean, but Steven, yes, he's a master storyteller, and yes, he's an amazing director, and as you know, he shaped the industry, and he's done all of these things. But at the end of the day, Steven's just a guy who loves what he does. Steven's just a guy who's like trying to pursue art, and art that makes him happy, and art that there are stories that he wants to tell. It's really simple. It's really, really simple. And you know, I think for a lot of people, especially people that are trying to, I don't know, get their foot in the door and start and make things happen for them, you know, that feeling, like, never, I don't think it ever goes away. I think that's like always this constant of, well, what's next? And like, how can I move forward? And what do we have to do? And I think for this person, here's this guy who has an abundance of everything. There's this art in letting go of having to feel the need to do something.
Yeah.
And just paying attention to what feels good, what feels right. And I think he's mastered that. And I mean, it's really, I don't know, it was an amazing thing to just observe him do that and just be him.
It's dream time. If you could be in any show, anywhere, at any time, what would it be?
Oh, man. If I could be in any show, anytime, anywhere, what would it be? I don't know, man. Maybe it would be like, I don't know. Sunday in the Park with George is pretty amazing. If I were to like do that. So, you know, if I could
as George
replace right? the beautiful Mandy Patinkin. I don't know. That's such a crazy thing to ask. I think it's more just like, it's just about chasing whatever that feeling is. Like whatever we talked about prior to this. So like whatever that.
Let's create it right now. It's Sunday. It's with who, it's where. Let's make it happen.
But you know, I don't know. It's hard to say it's this like one specific thing, because I don't know what that looks like until it just comes across.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of always been the case. There's never really been for me a single like, oh, a dream role or anything like that. There's never been that. It's just like this, I don't know. It's this unattainable thing. It's this thing that I can't quite put my finger on. And it's this feeling.
Well, when people ask, I'm going to say your dream role is George Surratt. Sunday in the Park with George.
Sure.
A Broadway revival. Sure. A West End revival. Let's throw you over to London.
That would be nice. Yeah.
I don't know who your Bernadette is, but we'll think about it.
Absolutely.
That's great. I think, frankly,
it could be Barrett Wilbert Weed. She's yes! pretty, she would be really great in that role, I think.
Oh boy. Oh, you just got me
I'm
excited.
I'm a huge fan of hers. Yeah.
Me too.
We were doing Dear Evan Hansen in DC while she was doing Cabaret there as well. And she was playing Sally Bowles. I unfortunately never got to see her do it, but I mean, I just think she's an amazing, amazing actor performer.
Yeah, no, me too. Yeah. And that production and that performance of Sally is like, I didn't see it either, but it's historically beloved and it's something I've heard about for years from lots of fans.
I would think so. I would think so. Yeah. She's wonderful, truly.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. We may have to revisit this since you are talking to a Broadway producer who loves all Sondheim musicals and loves you and Barrett. So let's just put a pin.
All right, there you go.
We may have to revisit this idea. All right.
We're
at a section of the show that we don't tell our guests, but since you've listened and you're a longtime listener, first-time caller, you might know about it. It's our musicals with themes lightning round, where I name a classic musical and you name the emotional theme that instinctually comes to you. And
oh, gosh.
We put 30 seconds on the clock and there's no wrong answer. And we just see where this free association game takes us. And, you know, I in my head think, how matched up are we?
Okay.
I will reveal at the end. Don't be nervous. Ready?
Yes.
Go. South Pacific.
An emotional feeling. Oh, warmth. I don't know.
Jesus Christ Superstar.
Rock. Star.
Funny girl.
Laughter.
Assassins.
Greed.
Oliver.
It's poor.
Man of La Mancha.
Dream.
La Cage aux Folles.
Ooh, fun.
Gypsy.
Yearning.
White Christmas.
Joy.
Good. You did well.
Was that good?
Yes, that was good.
Is that what you're supposed to do? Is emotional? No, is that what you said?
There's no wrong answer. It's what that title says to you. What then your responses? And you gave an array. You gave emotional responses.
Thank you for feeding my ego on this trip. I'm very insecure.
You gave aesthetic responses. You gave nostalgic responses. We got it all.
Very good.
God, I adore you so much, and time.
Yeah. Together. Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm just so glad. Listen, this time off has been so challenging and horrible. There's very little silver lining, but I'm glad to hear that through your experiences, you know, both before the pandemic and now during, has found some light in your world for you.
Yeah. No, thanks. Yeah, I'm fortunate. I really, I think that, you know, there is something to be said about having to kind of force yourself to sit down and just be, you know, and it's hard. Change is hard.
Yeah.
But it's not, that doesn't mean it's not necessary or needed.
Well, I can't wait to everything that's next for you, including West Side Story.
Thanks, and Mike. I you. Thank you.
Thank you.
When you're a jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day.
My First Show is produced by Josh Altman, MEP, Dori Berenstein, and Alan Seals, and is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. This episode was edited by Barrick Gunther. Special thanks to Leslie Papa and Whitney Holden Gore at Vivacity Media Group. For more info about the podcast, visit bpn.fm/myfirstshow. Follow me on Instagram at Eva R. Price.
Now, I know Tony like I know me, and I guarantee you can count him in.
In, out, let's get cracking.
Where are you going to find Bernardo?
It ain't safe to go into PR territory.
We had the dance tonight at the gym.
Yeah, but the gym's neutral territory.
Hey, Rab, I'm going to make nice with him. I'm only going to challenge him.
Great, Daddy-o.
So listen, everybody dress up sweet and sharp. Me, Tony, me at the dance at the 10. And walk tall.
We always walk tall.
We're Jets.
The greatest.
When you're a Jet, you're a top cat in town. You're a gold medal kid with a heavyweight crown.
When you're a Jet, you're the swingin' a sling. Little boy, you're a man. Little man, you're a king.
The Jets are in gear. Our cylinders are clinkin'. The shots are still clear. Cause every Puerto Rican's a lousy chicken.
Here come the Jets like a bat out of hell. Someone gets in our way. Someone don't feel so well.
Here come the Jets, little world's left aside. Better go underground, better run, better hide. We're drawing a line, so keep your noses hidden. We're hanging a sign, the visitor's forbidden, and we ain't kidding.
Here come the Jets, yeah,
and we're gonna beat every last bugging gang on the whole bugging street, on the whole bugging ever-loving street.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.